What does it mean? What does it mean?
I don't get it. I don't get it.
In reporting on the Catholic Church, do you think the media get it right, or is there an inherent bias?
Many in the secular media look for any opportunity they can to beat up on the Catholic Church and its traditions.
They don't know the difference between born again and born yesterday.
Taking a look at the world from a Catholic perspective. From our studio in Pensacola, you're listening to What It Means to Be Catholic with your host, Father Michael Nixon.
Welcome to What It Means to Be Catholic. I'm your host, Father Michael Nixon, joined in our studio here in beautiful Pensacola, Florida by Gene Church. Good to see you, Gene. How you doing today?
Great seeing you. I'm glad to have you back in the studio as opposed to what we attempted the last time, but we're going to get better at this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Last time we did a whole phone-in thing from, I was over in Tallahassee visiting some family, and I think it worked okay, but we are a work in progress, as are all people, and that's that's good news. We don't have everything together, and that's all right.
Well, you know, I'll take that as a justification. After all, we've gone through Divine Mercy Sunday, and let me tell you, I needed some divine mercy by the time Sunday rolled around.
Absolutely. Again, this past Sunday, which is the second Sunday of Easter, the Sunday within the octave of Easter, we celebrated Divine Mercy Sunday, which, again, is where the church is just reminding us of the incredible depth of God's mercy, his desire to open up the floodgates of mercy on the entire world. That came to us, of course, it comes to us from the scriptures, but in a special way in the 20th century, that came from the private revelations to a saint, Saint Faustina, and her from Poland, and her desire to share this message. She was really an apostle of mercy, to share that message with the world, and really the church kind of officially recognizes that as we celebrate Divine Mercy Sunday, as we celebrate the fact that God loves to forgive us. God is so crazy in love with us that he loves to forgive us. He loves to show his mercy to us, you know, where we could so often be dismissed or be vilified or be just cut down by our God, who is all good and all holy, because of our brokenness. He chooses to show us mercy, and that's the great heart of our Christian faith.
One of the things I really like to think about is the comment, I believe it was made by Pope Francis the other day. Others have said it before, but the idea that God does not tire of forgiving, we tire of asking.
Absolutely, absolutely. God he loves us and loves to forgive our sins. And something else, actually, with the Divine Mercy devotion that I really loved, and the Divine Mercy image that you see sometimes where Jesus is standing with his hand to his heart and rays of blue and white, of red and white, that blood and water which flowed forth from his side, that mercy, that grace that came forth from the wounded side of Christ. Right underneath that simple prayer that I just invite people, especially when you're going through difficult times, especially when you're going through struggles, Jesus, I trust in you. I mean, how deep and how profound and how simple just to be able to say that. Because even sometimes we don't feel like trusting in Jesus. We don't feel like we're there. But to say it, to speak those words, even to speak the holy name of Jesus, that has something, an ability to set us free, to allow us to enter into that trust that he desires us to have.
Well, you know, one of the things that occurs to me about that is that I think about this, and I think that Jesus really gave us an incredible message there. And I think we can get caught up sometimes too much in either the structure of trying to do the right thing. And I've heard you mention before the idea that Satan likes to draw attention to our failings and to try to convince us that basically we are that we're not worthy of being sons and daughters of God.
Absolutely, he loves to tempt us towards sin. You know the two lies of the enemy that he uses constantly because they work is, you know, the first one being that a sin will make us happy, that it will bring us satisfaction, that it'll bring us fulfillment. It never really can. Sin can't fulfill that longing that we have, which only can be fulfilled in God and true and authentic love. But then once we sin, again, the lie that the enemy uses, and we fall for it, so he keeps on using it, is once we've fallen into sin, he tells us, this is who you are. This is your identity. And the enemy of human nature will keep on using that sin, and we need God's mercy to remind us as we allow ourselves to be forgiven, as we seek his mercy in the sacrament of reconciliation, especially, that who we are God's beloved sons and daughters. We are sinners, absolutely, fall short, we forget, we lose sight of the truth of our dignity, but God loves us and still calls us his beloved sons and daughters.
Well, I want to take a moment to remind everybody, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in and ask any questions, it's toll-free, 877 877-770-7955. That's 877-770-7955. Or if you want to email in, our email address is questions. That's not too hard. Yeah. Questions at catholicradio.us. And so both methods are fully available to you today if you happen to have any questions. Once again, our phone number is 877-770-7955. Now, one of the things that we were talking about a little while ago that has come up in the news a lot right now and probably will be for the next several weeks is this HHS mandate.
Yes.
Tell me about what your understanding of that is and how that fits in with us.
Absolutely. Well, this is still something that very much concerns not only Catholics, but all people who believe in religious freedom, who believe that we have a right to exercise not just the freedom to worship, which is something that's kind of almost an unfortunate term that's started to be used, freedom to worship. You know, that our religious freedom here in the United States is hopefully something much more than just the freedom to worship, where the government won't impede me from going to church and worshiping God in the way that I choose, according to my faith tradition. But it's something much bigger than that, that my faith is not just about what I do on Sundays, what I do inside the confines of my church, but it affects and informs every part of my life. And that's an essential part of a true and authentic democracy, that we have freedom of religion, to practice our religion, to live our religion. And that's what builds up our culture and society, has since the very foundations of our country.
Well, you know, one of the things when you're talking about the freedom of religion or freedom of worship versus freedom of religion, I point out to a lot of people on that very issue that the old Soviet Union had freedom of worship. And and so that's really not the standard that we have historically held in this country. And unfortunately, those who oppose the church have been quite successful in teaching young people that there's a concept that somehow our religious beliefs, our morals, shouldn't be involved in the public sphere, which seems to me to be incredibly ludicrous. I mean, no matter, even if I'm going to elect somebody who wasn't Christian, whatever their moral code is should be probably one of the most important things to decide whether or not that person is worthy of my vote when I go to vote for them. Because, you know, quite frankly, do I want to vote for someone who is a liar? That it's going to tell me one thing and then do something different,
is a moral judgment.
Yeah, again, that's exactly a moral judgment. You wouldn't say, well, we don't want to impose our moral judgments on people, so it's okay if you'll lie to me, just so long as you look good or whatever the particular thing is that you're going to use as your standard. We all have standards that we use. The question is, when people object to our standards, the question largely arises. They don't approve of our particular standard because it makes them uncomfortable with the conclusions that we reach.
Absolutely. And really, I mean, the invitation and the difficulty that the Catholic Church poses to the world is that we don't have a 20-year worldview a view of history, which most people have. You know, I'm 30 years old, so my view of history and culture and society and morality and news is limited to really, I mean, let's be honest, the past 10 years. When I was 19, I wasn't paying too much attention to all of that. And really, you know, the past 10 years and where I was educated, where I went to school, the magazines and news periodicals that I read, the people that were in my frame of reference. So my way of understanding things, I see this all the time whenever I'm watching the news and I see people, you know, criticizing the Catholic Church in particular about, you know, our stance in favor of traditional marriages, the lifelong union of one man and one woman for the bringing forth of children. Again, this lifelong covenant, or the stance against contraception or whatever it might be, that they're coming from a worldview that is about 10, 15, 20 years and a very, very limited in time and space. The Catholic Church's worldview is 2,000 years old, and you add Judaism into that, is 5,000 years old. You add the fact that we are founded by Jesus Christ, the incarnate Son of God, it is infinite. It is eternal. And so we have a view of things that is much broader, so it's very difficult for people to even begin to engage with that, because we are very much a flavor of the month society. We're very much formed by what is popular and trendy right now rather than what is true. Because that's what it comes back to for us, is not whether this is trendy, not whether this is popular, not whether this is a fad, but is it true or not? And that's the main concern that drives us in our input in society and our input in the world and in our civic responsibility as a church, which informs the way we vote, informs the way we make decisions, informs the way that we seek to build up civilization, is this something that is true? Is this good? Is this beautiful? Is it consistent with the laws that come to us from God himself? And is it consistent with the natural law as well, which is something that people don't spend a lot of time reflecting on?
Well, you know, I always find it funny. You mentioning natural law, it's kind of interesting. One of the things, as an attorney in the past, and y'all don't hold that against me or anything, but in fact, one of the things that fascinates me is that many, many early U.S. Supreme Court decisions looked at the natural law to determine what the law should be, and whether or not something was proper or improper. That concept today is wholly foreign, but it clearly was a basis of how we helped establish the early laws of this country.
Absolutely, and it's interesting to me that just in societies we've tried to get away from the natural law. There's certain things that force us to get back to that. 20th century Europe's a perfect example, which as a society was very much affected by the Enlightenment, this casting off of any sort of dogmatic assumptions that came from religion, that came from natural law. Again, that man became the measure of everything, this sort of secular humanism. But then after World War II, in the aftermath of the Holocaust, really, during the Nuremberg trials, which were the trials that put the perpetrators, the Nazi war criminals, on trial, that they had to go back to natural law. They had to invoke that because there was no other way, because everything that the Nazis did was technically legal.
Right.
And you know, the kind of this legal positivist sort of understanding of things that if it's legal, it must be right. They said, no, they actually came forward in the Nuremberg trials and said, no, there's a deeper law. There's a law of humanity. There's a law of nature almost. And they could almost cringe as they said it, but they had to, because they realized this was evil. They realized what they did was wrong. But according to these standards that try to set aside natural law, they couldn't prosecute these people. So they had to invoke that because, again, there's right and there is wrong, and we are beholden to that no matter what the laws on the books say.
And I think that's an excellent point. And when we were talking about the HHS mandate a little while ago, I mean, let's try to explain to people what that involves and how the issue comes up, if you can.
Absolutely. And, you know, we as the Catholic Church, again, we're in the world. We're in the world, not of the world, not only as the institutional Catholic Church, but also as individual Catholics. We are called to be consistent in our faith in the way we live that out. I guess we can hit more on this as we come back from the break. But again, that consistency of life, that consistency of faith, that's not a hat that we take on and off being Catholic. You know, as we stand for life, as we stand against artificial contraception, as we stand against things that we consider moral evils.
Well, we've got phone lines open. Our telephone number is 877-770-7955. That's 877-770-7955. Call us up if you've got some questions that you'd like to share with Father Michael, and we should be back in just a few minutes. Divine Word Radio wishes to thank Vince Wibbs Automotive Group for their longtime support of Catholic Radio. Beginning over 50 years ago, Vince Wibbs brought his unique brand of values to the sale of Cadillacs, Buicks, and GMC products. His son Mark and their wonderful staff at Vince Wibbs Automotive Group carry on that tradition. They are authorized to handle Saturn warranty and repair. Vince Wibbs Automotive Group in Carr City, Pensacola. Their telephone number is 850-637-8982, and their website is vincewibbs.com. We've got a delicious way to support Catholic Radio. Please consider BeHolyHoney.com. Proceeds from the local honey venture go directly to support your Catholic radio station. BeHolyHoney.com offers world-famous Tupelo honey, which is a North Florida specialty, as well as many other wonderful varieties. They also offer handmade soaps, natural beeswax lip balm, beeswax candles, and honey-filled candies. Unlike honey you may find on the grocery store shelf, all of the gourmet honey products from BeHolyHoney.com are pure, raw, and unprocessed, which means they maintain all the natural health benefits that honey offers. At BeHolyHoney.com, you can choose one of their popular gift sets and include your personalized greetings. They will drop ship the order directly to your loved one's mailbox. Please visit them on the web today at www.BeHolyHoney.com. That's BeHolyHoney.com. And remember, the proceeds of your honey purchases go directly to help keep Catholic Radio on the air.
We are proud to have Paint Mart located at 2525 West Fairfield Drive as a friend of Catholic Radio. Paint Mart is a Benjamin Moore and Coronado paint supplier and offers thousands of color palettes. They actually save all your personal paint information so you don't have to keep that can in the garage when you need touch-ups. Paint Mart color matches to your fabric or any swatch of color that you need to match. They also sell hypoallergenic or no-odor paint. Personalized service is what you will experience at Paint Mart. Their number is 438-2399. That's 438-2399.
Taking a look at the world from a Catholic perspective. From our studio in Pensacola, you're listening to What It Means to Be Catholic with your host, Father Michael Nixon.
And we're back, and we are talking today just about living our Catholic faith in daily life, living our faith, especially here in the United States of America. It's an interesting time to be living our faith with a lot of challenges to that, to our proclamation of the gospel, or living out of the gospel in daily life. Especially since we as Catholics are called to really permeate society. And that's why the Catholic Church, because of this call from Jesus, that's why we started hospitals. That's why we exist in education in such a large measure throughout the world. That's why we do all the charitable things that we do, because of this mandate that comes to us from Jesus. And so really the conflicts that can arise at times between us and society come from the fact that, you know, we're not going to back down from our proclamation of Jesus Christ, no matter what we're doing. Again, many times it's not overtly religious. When you go to, we have Sacred Heart Hospital here in Pensacola, a wonderful Catholic institution. They don't ask you, for your Catholic card or anything. They treat people no matter what, because again, that's why we do what we do, is because of God's call for us, not because of somebody else's religious affiliation. But we can't compromise our faith in the process of doing that, whether it's in social services or in adoption work or in charities or in hospitals or education or whatever it might be.
You know, one of the things about that I think is important, and I think a lot of people miss out on, is that we're not just simply a social service agency, that we're called to do this, but it is part of it's part of what we do. It's part of our relationship, what God calls us to do. And it's not just merely to take care of the poor, but to bring them the good news of Jesus Christ at the same time. And so those two things are, in fact, part and parcel of the same thing. And that really derives some of the problem that we've got with the HHS mandate right now. Basically, what happened, to give you a historical perspective on this, is that prior to the Affordable Care Act being passed, which we're all familiar with, a lot of people refer to as Obamacare, one of the things that the act allowed is for the Secretary of Health and Human Services to set a standard for health insurance. And the idea behind it, on its face, sounds pretty good. The idea that when you go to buy health insurance, that you want to know what it is you're buying and have a clear picture of what's included in it. And that was fine up until beginning November of 2011, when the first discussions first started to come up that maybe we would like to mandate that all health insurance plans have artificial contraceptive coverage in it, something that had not been a mandated requirement prior to November 2011, and then also the idea that we might want to include the morning after pill and some abortifacients in what was considered to be a standard health insurance plan that was there. And so in conversations that at that time the Obama administration was having with key bishops and cardinals, including Cardinal Dolan, there was an assurance in November of 2011 that we would not have there would be religious exemptions put in there so that employers would not have to concern themselves with having to compromise their values. And that was exactly where we thought we were until January of 2012. And at that point, out of the blue, I understand Cardinal Dolan received a telephone call from President Obama saying, I hate to tell you, but we've decided we're going to go ahead and do and require that even Catholics will have to provide artificial contraception, and they will also have to provide the services of abortifacients. But the good news is we're going to give you a whole year until you have to get around to doing it. And it was at that point that Cardinal Dolan said, oh, so I have a year to violate my values as opposed to doing it right now. And that's what really began the conflict this past year, unfortunately during an election year, of the issue of the HHS mandate. And for a lot of people, I think you're right. They look and they say, well, it's not like you're being kept from worshiping. You don't have to buy that contraception, or you don't have to use those abortifacients? Why can't you just provide them for everybody else? And so they have a real problem understanding the moral context behind that. Talk about that for a moment, if you would.
Absolutely. Father. Well, again, you know, we're called to be consistent. This consistency of life that should mark us, that we can't separate our faith from our daily life, our faith from our morality, our faith from our place of work, even. Not that if you work in a secular business that you have to be, you know, talking about Jesus every single day or every single hour. Usually you don't, but that's okay. But your values should still be informed by that. And the fact that we're being encouraged to set that aside as if this weren't important, as if someone's conscience weren't an inviolable sacred reality, that's the real tragedy that's coming forward here, that people would see your conscience as just being, you can throw it away. I mean, you can take it or leave it.
Well, one of the things that I think we're seeing happen, a lot of people saying, well, you know, nothing's happening, so therefore it must be a bad situation. Some of the cases that have been filed, and EWTN filed the first of the cases that were filed, but a number of colleges have jumped in, a number of dioceses and archdioceses have filed suits, and over half of those suits have been successful, even some of them in terms of Catholic business people have done a very good job of those cases winning and proceeding through the courts. Ultimately, this decision will be probably decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. But those cases which have been lost so far have been lost entirely based on what I think everyday people call technicalities, the idea that they were filed too soon because as of yet no penalties have been assessed. They don't begin to have not begun to assess any penalties against someone, so therefore you have arguably not been damaged yet. But nonetheless, I think you're going to see people continue to fight this fight, and I'm very optimistic on what the outcome's going to be.
Absolutely. And then we'll be continuing with this conversation. Again, there's a lot to be said about the HHS mandate. We actually have a call right now. We're going to take this call here. We have Dolly from Pensacola. Dolly, are you there?
Yes.
Hello. Thank you for your call. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I feel guilty about taking you off this really informative subject.
Oh, we have plenty of time. We'll keep talking. Don't worry about that, Dolly. What's your question today?
Well, my question is a technical one. I have a friend, her son's in seminary, and I had heard that a priest mother, when the mother passes away, that she automatically, in a sense automatically, goes straight to heaven. Is this true? And of course, I would imagine that if she turned into a mass serial killer or something, that wouldn't be. But I mean, with all things, venial sins and whatever, that she would go, you know, straight. She'd bypass purgatory and go straight to heaven. Is this true? And if it is, when did it begin? And can you talk about that? And I'm going to hang up and listen to you on the radio.
All right. Thank you so much, Dolly. God bless you. Bye. Thank you for your question. All right,
That
is a great question from Dolly. I'm not familiar with that particular teaching as some sort of dogmatic proclamation, but if it's not, it should be. And I can speak.
You're just trying to get your mother in on the deal here.
Absolutely, Mom. I love you so much. Just the reality, and I think this ties in perfectly. Pope Francis talked about this just after the feast of Easter. We talked about the importance and centrality of women in the faith. He talked about the first witnesses to the resurrection of Jesus were women, and that they were able to give this proclamation, and then in continuing essential role that women play, especially as mothers, especially to pass on the faith and to do it in a dynamic, warm, loving way. So I can speak for myself. My mother has played and continues to play a huge role in my faith and my life as a priest. A beautiful practice that maybe this understanding came from. When a priest is part of the ordination of a priest is where his hands are consecrated by the bishop, where they're anointed with the holy chrism. And that chrism is wiped with a purificator or sometimes kind of a stylized cloth. And that is given to the mother. And oftentimes the mother will be buried with that wrapped around her own hands. And again, a sort of symbol as she journeys into eternity of what her life has given birth to, that she has raised, that she has given birth to someone who was ordained, you know, who acted in the person of Christ in the priesthood. So I think, if nothing else, there's definitely special grace and merits within that, and not just for the mothers of priests, but for all mothers who at least have a lot of their time in purgatory cut off because of the difficulties and struggles that come with children.
Well, I was going to say that I find that sometimes that they're serving purgatory time out here, I suspect.
Absolutely. Well, and also just the fact, I mean, mothers of priests have to deal with their sons going through seminary and all of a sudden becoming know-it-alls and becoming very, very smart, so quote-unquote, when really the faith of their mothers is probably a lot more profound and deep and closer to the reality to which we're called. So thank you so much, Dolly, from Pensacola, for that call. And again, we should be praying for priests, but also praying for the families of priests, praying for the mothers and the fathers and those who help raise those men who will be able to say yes to God and their vocation. A lot of times families struggle with that, struggle with kind of the new identity that comes from a son or daughter discerning and approaching a religious vocation of any sort. You know, how do you interact with that? How do you cultivate that? You know, because again, the main concern for most families, they want their children to be happy. And the realization, I think, is a great realization that happened with my family, that happens with most families, as their sons go through seminaries, their sons or daughters go through religious formations, you realize this is a good life. You know, the fact that God calls us to this is not some sort of cold, dark world of sacrifice, that it is a joyful life where we can really be fully alive. And I think that becomes a source of joy for the families, and sometimes a source of conversion, ongoing conversion for the families as well. So keep praying for priests, keep praying for priests' mothers. I love you, Mom, in case you're listening to this right now.
Well, once again, our telephone number is 877-770-7955, 877-770-7955, and our email address is questions@catholicradio.us. We were talking about the HHS mandate, but, you know, I think it involves a bigger question just than the mandate itself. I think ultimately, as you said, we'll be able to discuss this across the long haul, but we have a whole real change that's happened secularly in our society in the last handful of years, and the thought that that anybody's truth is right, that whatever, it's all right for you to believe what you want to believe, it's all right for me to believe what I want to believe, and that tolerance is and I think this is kind of interesting. It looks to me like tolerance these days is defined as you have to agree with me.
Absolutely. Whatever, again, because when what is true for me is true for you, and what is true for you is true for you, when those come in conflict, the only recourse we have is not truth, is not the natural law, is not the reality, tradition as we've always understood it. It becomes law.
Right.
Law becomes what we have to turn to. So once I get whatever my truth is legalized, then you have to come into conformity to that, which, as we already discussed with the Nuremberg trials, with the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King being a huge proponent of natural law and his overturning, his constant beautiful work to overturn the segregation laws of the South, the Jim Crow laws and others, to recognize that just because something is made into a law, just because something is legalized, does not make it true. That
right.
It still has to conform to this natural law that ultimately comes from the divine law, comes from God. And again, we're always going to be a source of contradiction because we keep pointing towards that.
Well, and that's one of those things that I think people miss out on a lot of times and do not realize there really are priorities. There really are situations where right and wrong are established. We should be back in just a few minutes and have an opportunity to share more with you at that time. Our telephone number is 877-770-7955. That's 877-770-7955. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
WCVC would like to thank our wonderful sponsor, CatholicPrayerCards.org. CatholicPrayerCards.org offers custom printed holy cards in quantities as low as 50 or 100 cards. These are great keepsake ideas for first communions, confirmations, baptisms, weddings, graduations, and funerals. Prices start as low as $34.95 for full-color custom holy cards. Please visit them on the web at www.catholicprayercards.org.
Do you have an unwanted car, truck, RV, motorcycle, or boat sitting in your driveway taking up parking space? Well, you can now donate that vehicle to Divine Word Communications. We'll make all the arrangements for the pickup, repair, and sale of your vehicle. You'll receive a tax deduction for your donation. What could be easier? All you have to do is call us at 1-866-628-2277, 1-866-628-CARS. A customer service representative will answer all your questions and arrange to pick up your car within 2 to 4 business days. Call 1-866-628-2277, 1-866-628-CARS. What could be easier? This is an opportunity for you to continue to support Catholic Radio with Divine Word Radio by calling 1-866-628-2277. That's 1-866-628-CARS. clean out the driveway and support Catholic Radio.
Divine Word Radio is happy to have the support of Factory Service. Factory Service is the area's factory-authorized company for installation and service of high-end appliances, including Sub-Zero Wolf, Melee, and Viking appliances. Joe McGovern has been in the trade since 1988 and operates under the slogan, "When you have the best, call the best." For more information about Factory Service, you can call Joe at 850-474-6553. That's Factory Service at 474-6553.
Taking a look at the world from a Catholic perspective. From our studio in Pensacola, you're listening to What It Means to Be Catholic with your host, Father Michael Nixon.
And we're back, and we are talking today about a lot of different things, but also, again, just always what it means to be Catholic, what it means to live our Catholic faith, to be a member of the church founded by Jesus Christ here in the United States in 2013, which, again, always has its own unique challenges and struggles, but beauty as well, that there's so much beauty in living out our faith, and that we have a foundation in from which to make decisions. We have a foundation from which to live our lives, to vote, to work, to interact with other people, and it's a foundation that is solid because it was founded by Jesus Christ, and that's a beautiful gift that we have, and that is rooted in the truth of our humanity, and really is a constant call to conversion, you know, for the world, but first and foremost for me. I think that's always something. Whenever there's debates that are coming up, we're going to talk some more about this HHS mandate and some of the good materials that are coming out from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops about that, just to inform us about it as well. But this realization that first and foremost, the place that needs to be converted is not the president, is not this Supreme Court justice, is not this person over there, this senator. The first person that needs conversion is me. And I think that that's a good thing, because if I'm engaging with other people and who disagree with me, who want to cut down my faith, who want to ridicule what I believe in, or even make what I believe in illegal, that if I don't love them, then I've lost. Then we both lose in that situation.
You're absolutely right about that. One of the things that I also wanted to point out is when we talk about the HHS mandate, of course, it ends up being discussed like a Catholic matter. But one of the things that I think is really worth mentioning is that it is not a purely Catholic matter. And in fact, our Protestant brothers and sisters are well aware of that. We have seen people who are not Catholic, for example, the people who own Hobby Lobby, the family there, who are not Catholic and who have stepped up, and they're fighting this issue as well. And you've seen groups like the Manhattan Declaration Group, which are largely Protestant evangelicals, who have stepped up and basically taken the position, look, if the government is willing to take on the big kid on the block, they'll be after us next.
Absolutely. And that's really, I mean, the reason why the Catholic Church kind of bears the brunt of this is because we are leaders in the world of education. We are leaders in the world of healthcare. We are leaders in the world of social services, of charity at every level, with Catholic charities, with St. Vincent Paul societies, with just whether it's the on a national, global level or just at the parish level, that we are the ones that are out there doing this work. And so that's kind of part of the challenge too. When you mentioned what happened with the Affordable Care Act, when under Kathleen Sebelius it got put forward as now contraception is an essential part of healthcare. For us as Catholics, we're saying we really, I mean, this isn't to brag, this is just a reality of history, that we invented healthcare. We invented right. The hospital system as we understand it. And we've been doing this a very, very long time, and we've never understood pregnancy as a disease.
Right.
And we've understood that this is an intrinsic part of life. Just as we uphold the dignity and value of each and every person from conception to natural death, that that nobody's life is expendable, that there are intrinsic values in the human person, in sexuality, in marriage, that we are called to uphold, and to set those aside for the sake of, again, this very, very short worldview that's being put forward by the current administration, by this Affordable Care Act, that now contraception is an intrinsic, not just a part of healthcare, but an intrinsic right. That now someone's right to contraception trumps the right of someone to stand for their religion, to stand for their conscience. Now that I have to pay for that as a right, which is ludicrous in the history of rights, and it's not in the Bill of Rights, obviously. But again, we understand the struggles, we understand the difficulties, but that we can't compromise on our conscience there, because if we do, all is lost. Our whole value system is undone if we are taking a stand against our conscience.
Well, you know, in the last segment, we talked about the idea that natural law is involved in all of this. And I, one of the things that I thought of that I just read in the last couple of days about somebody who was not Catholic at all, but who addressed a similar issue is Drew Barrymore. She is now a mother, and she had made a statement that surprised everybody. She had said she had determined that women really can't have it all, that you have to, that we make choices. Everybody makes choices in their lives, and she's made the decision to step away from directing because she looks at that child, and she said, when I look at my daughter, I realize she needs me. And that this is now the most important thing in this part of my life to be doing is to take care of my own daughter. And maybe there'll be time in the future for me to do the things that I think would be really good for my career and other things. But I really have to choose what it is that I'm going to do. And I think that's really where the choice arises when we talk about giving women choice. The choice becomes whether or not you're going to live your life the way that God, nature brings us to be, or whether we're going to try to do something that's fundamentally different. And, you know, the reality is about this, women and men as well are biologically wired a certain way, to be a certain way. And I think we went through a long period of time beginning in the late 60s and moving forward, this idea that men and women were merely interchangeable. That there was no difference whatsoever, except in terms of opportunities and so forth. And I've noticed a lot of times in secular publications where people who have had a sort of a more modernistic liberal worldview about things are saying, "Gosh, I'm finding out that it really doesn't matter." I take my sons. I have sons now, and I try to teach them to be nice to everybody and to be sweet. And they keep beating up on each other and wanting to play with cars and trucks. And even though I keep them away from that television that's supposed to influence them, these things just keep popping up. And I don't understand how it's happening. Maybe there is a difference in the way that we're wired.
And again, to the celebration of that difference. So, I mean, praise God. I teach with our young people in the school and also in the high school as well, the theology of the body, this proclamation that gender matters. Again, the fact that we're made in God's image and likeness, male and female, of equal dignity before God, absolutely. But there's a complementarity there, that we're not the exact same. How boring would this world be if everyone were dudes, you know, if everyone were girls? And whenever I bring that to the kids, you know, what would this world be like if everyone were boys or if everyone were girls? And the first thing they really say is boring. And I think that's it's a real mark of the divine in the excitement and the beauty and the complementarity of male and female that God has created us to be. And we're called to uphold that. And again, whether it's our, when we're talking about marriage, when we're talking about human sexuality, when we're talking about contraception, healthcare, whatever it might be, and now into adoption and other things as well, that reality is something that we are called to cherish and uphold. I wanted to bring our attention to, again, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops have done tremendous work in sort of leading the rest of us, leading the church in the response to the HHS mandate, also to the recent sort of lobbies against the Defense of Marriage Act and other things that are going on that we're hearing a lot about in the news, but hearing definitely kind of slanted viewpoints from the right or from the left, but definitely slanted. I think it's important for us to go to USCCB's website, usccb.org. They have a lot of great information on there, but they have just kind of a question and answer thing on things that are going on right now with the HHS mandate, because something kind of a misnomer that was put forward is that there was an accommodation made for a religious exemption, so everything's okay now. I actually encountered a gentleman when I was flying on a plane recently who that's what he thought, because that's what was put forward. When really, the first thing is the mandate is unchanged.
Right.
Nothing was changed in the mandate. Almost all health plans must cover female sterilization. All FDA-approved contraceptives, including drugs and devices that can prevent implantation, and at least one drug, Ella, that can cause abortion after implantation, and related education and counseling, quote-unquote, for women and girls of reproductive age. So all of that is still there, unchanged. Now, again, as you mentioned, we as the Catholic Church have a year to figure out how we can violate our consciences in doing that. You know, that was benevolently granted to us, and now all of a sudden our religious freedom is not an inherent right, but is something that is only given to us if we apply for it. From the government, which, again, we're getting to very, very dangerous waters when we start to stand in that spot where my religious freedom is something that is not, again, a given. It is something that I have to apply for and that I have to somehow qualify for, you know, that this organization is not religious enough. Yeah, sure, St. Paul Catholic Church qualifies because that's a church, but does Catholic Charities in Pensacola qualify, or does a Catholic school qualify, because those institutions aren't serving just Catholics? So again, these very, very murky waters that this places us in, because this mandate is unchanged. There's been a lot of talk, but as we all know, and this is no slam against Democrats or Republicans or anything, that the promise of a politician is not worth much. No offense against them, but the promise of a politician, for them to say, oh, we're going to change that, or we're going to get that taken care of, or you're going to be okay, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'm sorry, you know, call me cynical, but that's not enough. That in writing, for what the bill actually says, for what the Affordable Care Act actually puts out, nothing has changed. We religious institutions, private religious citizens will be required under pain of law, penalty of fines or other things, to violate their consciences, and that is intolerable.
Well, you know, and we would be in the same position. An entity such as ours would be required to have to provide abortifacients if we met the number of employees that some other entities out there do. And so that is certainly a serious concern for a lot of people. A lot of Catholic businessmen, for example, are very uncomfortable about the situation that this puts them in. One of the things I think a lot of people miss out when they about the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, is that these were put forth before the Constitution was approved. In other words, they wrote the Constitution, sent it out, and found out very quickly that they weren't going to get the necessary signatures from the state to form the different states to form our nation unless they made some changes to what they agreed to already. And these were guarantees in the 10 amendments that said, look, we're demanding we have these freedoms if you expect for us to allow you to have a country. And so it doesn't work the other way around. It isn't that the government is being benevolent and allowing us to have these rights, but rather that the only reason the government can exist is because we have these rights. If the government's not willing to acknowledge that we have these rights, then they have no right to exist.
Absolutely. And that right, again, comes to us from the Creator, comes
right
to us from God, whatever language we might use there. This does not come from King George. It does not come from President Washington. It doesn't come from President Obama. That this comes to us from God himself, because we are created in God's image and likeness, that we have a worth and a dignity that the government is commanded to protect. And that fundamental part of that dignity is our freedom of conscience, to exercise our conscience. And where the government is violating that, we need to seriously reassess what is happening.
Well, I would encourage you, do not sit aside on this. Take the time to read through what's out there. Do a really good search and see what you can find out on this subject. It is not hard at all in a number of Catholic sites, including the USCCB's website, to learn what you can about the process and learn it from someone who is not being slanted in terms of trying to establish the idea that, oh, no, everything's fine, keep moving on, you don't need to look at this, but be able to get a clear picture of what exactly is going on. Our telephone number is 877-770-7955. That's 877-770-7955. And we will be back in just a few minutes, have an opportunity to talk to you about some more aspects of how the government is involved and what we deal with in a modernistic world. We'll be right back.
Divine Word Radio is proud to receive the support of Furman & Furman, attorneys with over 50 years of combined legal experience representing criminal law, personal injury, and adoption clients in Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. Furman & Furman are committed to personal service, and they answer their own phones. Their offices are located on 201 East Government Street in Pensacola and 1703 Main Street in Daphne, Alabama. Their numbers are 850-429-7431 or 251-228-1744.
Did you know that no Christian church accepted contraception as morally permissible before 1930? Discover why and how to work with a woman's natural times of being fertile and infertile. Learn a 99% effective method of natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study. Search for a class at the Couple-to-Couple League's website, ccli.org, or call 800-745-8252.
This is Father Hector Perez from St. Stephen Roman Catholic Church at 900 West Garden Street in Pensacola, Florida. Thanks to Pope Benedict XVI, the old Latin Mass restored to the church is here at St. Stephen's Thursday evening, a low Mass, that is a prayed Mass, at 6 p.m., followed by benediction, and on Sunday morning, a high Mass, that is a sung Mass, at 10:30 a.m. Please come and join us and see the beauty of the tradition of the Catholic Church that goes back to the time of Pope Gregory the Great in the year 500. God bless you, and we'll see you soon.
WCVC would like to thank our sponsor, Sasso Engineering. Sasso Engineering is a professional engineering consulting firm specializing in accident reconstruction and product failure analysis. To view sample cases, visit them at their website, sassoengineering.com. That's S-A-S-S-O engineering.com. Or call them at 850-524-4335. Once again, all of us at WCVC would like to thank Sasso Engineering for their generous support.
Taking a look at the world from a Catholic perspective. From our studio in Pensacola, you're listening to What It Means to Be Catholic with your host, Father Michael Nixon.
Welcome back to What It Means to Be Catholic. It's so good to have you with us today as we've been talking today about some of the troubling things going on in the country. Again, there's always hope, though. There's always hope. If nothing else, because we're not made for this world, we're made for heaven. But we've been talking a little bit about the HHS mandate, again, the Affordable Care Act, and what that means for us as Catholics. A couple more things, just from the USCCB, we mentioned they've got some great resources for that. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops have done a fantastic job of leading us in kind of the response to this. Again, you know, I mean, they've made a lot of press about how big and overwhelming this Affordable Care Act is, and you know, has anyone actually read this thing? And I think there are a couple people that you know definitely got their names on the wall for trudging through that whole thing. But what it means for us, as believers, and just something important for us to recognize and remember that the quote unquote religious employer exemption still excludes most religious organizations. So only a church and its integrated auxiliary, a convention or association of churches, or the exclusively religious activities of a religious order are exempt. So really, you know, that excludes Catholic hospitals, that excludes Catholic charities, that excludes so many things whose primary services are not of a religious quote-unquote nature, but are of a social nature. You know, the things that the government kind of tries to do as well, but we as a Catholic Church, again, we've been doing this a very, very long time. We were doing it before the United States even existed. And so that exemption does not apply to them. It applies to an individual parish or maybe even an individual diocese or religious order, but not to religious organizations.
Well, you know, a lot of people have pointed out that if Jesus were here today, he would not qualify for the exemption because he kept insisting on taking care of other people who were not part of his followers. And so as a result, that would disqualify him under the current regulations. Or being able to get an exemption, he would have to figure out how to change his rules to follow the rules of the local government.
Absolutely. And just a couple more points from the USCCB here, that the proposed accommodation for non-exempt religious employers does not remove the burden on religious freedom. That a wide array of religious organizations serving the common good, that's, again, we go back to this, the schools, the colleges, universities, hospitals, charitable agencies are not exempt. And so, again, this work that they're doing, which is so important, and again, we as the Catholic Church, we understand that healthcare is an essential thing. This is an important thing that, you know, we have not been and are not in disagreement with the government over. We want people to have affordable healthcare. We want people to be covered. We don't want someone suffering unduly just because they don't have the funds. But we've done that in a different way, not by mandating it, not by violating our consciences, but by being charitable, by reaching out to the poor, by having hospitals and having free clinics and having things that are helping people who are in need. But this is being seriously impeded by this because most institutions could not hold up to. And I know we mentioned Hobby Lobby that's willing to really take it on the chin as far as millions of dollars in fines that can be leveled against them. And I'm not sure what status they're at right now, but as far as the threat of that is very, very real, that they're willing to do what is right even at the chance of being ruined financially because it's the right thing.
Right.
And most institutions, most Catholic charities, most adoption agencies, they're not rolling in money. I know, you know, we kind of sometimes get a different understanding of the church that we're somehow, you know, swimming in money all the time. But most of these, they're living month to month and doing the good work they're doing, not because they're cutting a huge profit off of it, but because it's the right thing to do. And so they don't have the capacity to be able to take these fines and to be able to deal with all these legal struggles that are new. That, again, this, that all of a sudden a right has been created, a right to contraception, and is now being imposed on them.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. One of the things that that we see as a result of all of this is that we're looking at a mandate. You were talking about how it doesn't cover most people. In fact, any private individual who operates a business is not going to be covered. Their religious freedom is not going to be covered. One of the things we talked about during the break was the idea, and I think a lot of people miss out on this, the first 10 amendments of the Constitution, what we refer to as the Bill of Rights, were constructed and approved after the Constitution, but before the Constitution was actually approved. The 13 colonies were not willing to sign off and approve the Constitution unless there were protections given that protected individuals and their states themselves. And so one of the points here is that the federal government does not give us these rights. These rights pre-exist the government itself. And in fact, the only reason the government can exist is because we have these rights. So to the extent that they attempt to take it away from us, they lose their legitimacy in terms of a government itself. And that's one of the reasons that these particular rights are so key and are so important. It's not something where we just pass a law, everything will be fine, or the majority of the people do this. I'm always fascinated that when these people are on the outside of where the law is, then they're fighting hard to try to get the laws changed. But how dare you want to try to protect your own rights that have been in place all the way up until this year by insisting that the law remain the same way it is? You're the problem, not the them, because hey, they've succeeded in changing the law, so now you have an obligation to follow the law.
Absolutely. And again, our call in all this, even when we're being attacked, even when we're being vilified or straight up being made fun of for our stance against contraception, we can probably spend more time talking about why the Catholic Church is against contraception, why the Catholic Church considers contraception an intrinsic moral evil, which is a big deal and very, very countercultural, something that all Christian churches up to
1930.
Till 1930 were in complete agreement over, and then kind of concessions started to be made. Now the Catholic Church really is the only clear moral voice that's saying that no, this is not something that we can stand for. This is not a good for society, that the separation of the unitive and procreative aspects of sexuality is actually a damage to society. We can talk more about that in another show. But again, the bishops point us to www.nchla.org. And they can help you if you want to actually do some of the things as far as protecting, supporting healthcare and Conscious Rights Act. You can log on to that website and check out what they have to say. We're going to shift gears here a little bit. Again, you know, we are right now in the season of Easter, this great season. We just finished the octave of Easter, which culminated with that great feast day of Divine Mercy Sunday. Something that got bumped, a feast day, and we in the Catholic Church, we love our feast days. And, you know, the different times and seasons of the year, again, Lent, that time of fasting and repentance and growing closer to the Lord. And then now the joy of Easter. I find at times, I don't know about you, Gene, but Easter can be difficult to live. You know, Lent, we kind of get, you know, you suffer, you say no to yourself, and Jesus told us to not look sad, but you can kind of feel like you're droopy and looking sad because you didn't have coffee that morning. But Easter, which is 50 days of joy, 50 days of rejoicing in the resurrection, that can be hard to pull off.
Well, it is for me because, like, I'm out of candy already, so that's one of the first problems right away with Easter.
The joy just dried up.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I'm going through sugar withdrawal associated with it. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that we are more suited to the idea of sacrifice and suffering on occasions than the joyful aspect of this and the idea of trying to be happy about everything that's going on. But I have to say, I don't know what the weather's like for all of you out there, but here in beautiful Pensacola, it has been nothing but beautiful right now.
It's hard to not rejoice right now. It's hard to not recognize God's love for us when you step outside and it is looking as good as it is. But a feast day that was, as I mentioned, was kind of got bumped. It falls during Holy Week. It's usually on March 25th. And this feast day is so, so, so important for us as Catholics, as Christians. It's the Annunciation. Again, March 25th is 9 months before December 25th, which is the birth of Jesus. So
explain to everybody. I know we know, but explain to everybody what the Annunciation means.
The Annunciation, absolutely. It can be found in the first chapter of Luke's Gospel, Luke 1:26-38, this account. And again, why it's so central, because this is when the angel Gabriel sent from God to Mary. And I love the words that are used, to a town of Galilee called Nazareth. Now, when you go to a big city, you don't need to say, you know, I went to Chicago. It's a town in Illinois. You know, people know Chicago. But Nazareth was a small town. During the time of Joseph and Mary, when they lived there, they had 500 people living in Nazareth. This is a small backwater town, a small backwater part of the Roman Empire. It's kind of Palestine section of the Roman Empire that nobody would have known about. And so they have to say the town of Galilee called Nazareth. And that's where God sends his angel. That's where God has prepared Mary, the Immaculate Conception, to be able to propose his plan, God's plan, that God had chosen her. He says, "Hail, full of grace, the Lord is with you." Again, this announcement, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. You will conceive in your womb and bear a son. You shall name him Jesus." Again, this invitation from God for a creature, Mary, to be an intrinsic part of his saving plan. For her yes, because Mary, again, eventually, praise God, she says, "Behold, I am the handmaid of the Lord. Let it be done unto me according to your word." This fiat, as we call it, this let it be done, this yes to God's plan. And because of that, the incarnation happened. And because of that, our God entered into our human condition. And because of that, we are saved. And so this is a huge, essential part of our faith, the incarnation, when the word became flesh. And just to point something else out here, something interesting, and again, people sometimes wonder why we as Catholics spend so much time talking about Mary, that Mary is the new Ark of the Covenant. And Luke makes that very, very clear. When Mary asks him, "How can this be, since I have no relations with the man?" He says, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you." That overshadowing, that coming down of the Holy Spirit, the word that Luke uses there is only used once in the Old Testament. Again, Luke using the Greek Old Testament. And it's when the power of God, the glory of God, came down upon the Ark of the Covenant, God's presence with his people. So Mary really becomes this living, breathing Ark of the Covenant. She is the one who carries Jesus around with her. She is the first Christian. We as Christians are called to carry our Lord Jesus to the ends of the earth. That every person we encounter, every person we meet encounters the Lord. And that's really what Mary does in such a beautiful way. We, of course, get the first part of the prayer, the Hail Mary, from this Annunciation, from the angel Gabriel's word, her, "Hail, full of grace, the Lord is with you." And so when we pray that prayer, when we ask Mary's intercession, we are recognizing that God chose her for a mission that is can't be replaced. Again, she's an irreplaceable part of this, of God's saving plan here. And so when we honor Mary, when we ask for her prayers and her intercession, we are merely honoring the great, amazing work that God has done in this his most beautiful of creatures, Mary.
And I think a lot of people miss out on this link between Mary and the Ark of the Covenant. And you see signs of that in Revelation 11 and 12, when the end of chapter 11, the beginning of chapter 12, where the church sees that as a symbol that's given to point out that Eve is the Ark of the Covenant that we end up seeing.
That Mary, as the new Eve, is the Ark of the Covenant. Absolutely, that it's unveiled in the heavens, the Ark of the Covenant, and then we see the sign of the woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and the 12 stars around her head, that she gives birth to the Messiah. Again, Mary, our constant intercessor, the one who points us to Jesus, the one who gave her flesh, gave her body, gave her blood. Again, we talk about that essential role of women, that essential role of mothers, that the flesh that she gave to the Son of God is the flesh that eventually he would give to us on the cross. So we rejoice in that reality. We rejoice in our faith as Catholics, as Christians. We thank you so much for listening with us today, and we will be back again next week, Tuesday of next week at 11 o'clock Central Time, 12 o'clock Eastern. And until then, may God bless you and your family.
Thank you, Valdez.